What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for episode 2 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Joe Orrico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99. That is where I share out all the links to this show, any articles I may write, any fantasy baseball content that I put out into the world at all. It does get shared out through my Twitter page. That's JoeOrrico99. Guys, this is incredibly exciting. This is the legit first episode of this new podcast. I know there was a show in the feed from yesterday that's more of an introduction just to kind of get you guys acclimated with the new show feed, with the new podcast network that I'm a part of, the Old Man Squad Fantasy Sports Podcasting Network, which was founded by my good friend and former boss, Dan Bespris. We are working together once again. If you guys have heard me over the past couple of years, I've talked about Dan on my show. Dan's talked about me on his show. We've had a long connection here since I got into the fantasy industry. So it's great to stay connected with him. And it's great to be back behind the mic talking fantasy baseball. I've done a couple of guest appearances over the last couple of weeks, but it's felt very weird to not have a show of my own since I left Fantasy MLB Today. But we are going to get right back into the swing of things. This is going to be essentially a continuation of that show where I am talking about what's going on the previous day. That's usually what we are going to talk about here. As a daily show, I want to focus on the daily topics, and we are usually going to talk about the biggest events from the previous day's games. We are also going to be bringing on a lot of guests. I already have a couple of really exciting guests. One of them has been on the show many times. One of them is a new guest. So there's going to be some old voices, some new voices as well. A lot of exciting things are going to be happening on this podcast feed. So make sure you guys, I know it's brand new and I'm going to be really annoying here in the first couple of weeks, but make sure you guys are subscribing to the show, hitting that 5-star review button, leaving a couple of nice words. It really does help me to get the show off the ground. I'm sure we'll get back to where we were, but it will take some building up and it will take some help from you guys. And just taking a couple seconds and hitting that 5-star button really is a massive, massive help to me here. So I really appreciate all of you who have already done that. I've already gotten a couple people who have sent me DMs saying I've subscribed, I've given the review. I really, truly appreciate that so much. Let's just keep it going, guys. Over these next couple weeks, let's build this show back up to what we had before. But let's get into some of the news and notes. That is what we talk about here, generally speaking, and we are going to keep that the same here for the first legitimate episode. I know it's episode 2, but this is essentially our lead-off episode. So let's get right into it, and let's talk about Reese Olson. Amazing run that Reese Olson has been on, albeit yesterday it did come against Miami, which is, you know, it's not a great team, but still, 8 shutout innings, 6 strikeouts, only allowed 3 hits, did not walk a batter, 29% CSW and a 13.5% swinging strike rate. Now, he's overperforming for sure. He has a 2.09 ERA, 0.99 whip, 41 strikeouts over 47 in a third innings pitched. This is not what he is going to be giving you the entire season, right? Like, those strikeouts are probably going to be roughly there, you know, 41 and 47 innings. That's a decent number to look at. It's like, yeah, okay, every 50 innings, you're going to get maybe 45 strikeouts from Reese Olson, something like that. That's probably going to stay about the same. Is he going to have a 2.09 ERA? I would say likely not, but that's fine because he doesn't really need to be that good. He won't be able to sustain this, but I think he's still worth a roster shot in a roster spot in most formats. He's in the 30s on Yahoo, which, I mean, maybe it makes sense, but considering what he's been doing, I would have thought a lot more people would have picked him up over these last couple weeks, especially considering he faced Miami. I would have thought the streams would be through the roof yesterday. There was a decent number of people who picked him up, but he's still just 37% rostered. I would take a look at Reese Olson. Yes, he's overperforming, but even those ERA estimators are not brutal. It's not like, you know, the ERA is 2, but the XFIP is 5. The XFIP is 3.76. His FIP is 2.54. His Sierra right now is 3.77. Now, something to keep in mind, he has not allowed a home run this season. Generally speaking, he has been somebody who's allowed like 1.2 homer 9 for his, you know, later career in the minors and AA and AAA. And then last year in the bigs, it was 1.22 homer 9. So the home runs will come eventually. It won't be something where he doesn't allow a home run all season. That's keeping these numbers down. But at the same time, I think Reese Olson is still worth a roster spot in pretty much all 10-team formats, and I think 37% rostered is kind of selling him short a little bit here. Let's talk about Joe Ross. He had a great start against Pittsburgh, 21 whiffs in just 5 innings, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, and 1 walk. The swinging strike rate was incredible, 23% with a 36% CSW. He entered today with a 12% swinging strike rate, 11.9 for the season, with a 17.9 strikeout rate. And generally, with swinging strike percentage, it doesn't always work out perfectly, but usually you can multiply it by two, and that's like expected strikeout rate. If a guy has an 11% swinging strike rate, they should have about a 22% K rate. The fact that he has a 12% swinging strike with only an 18% strikeout rate tells you that maybe there should be some more strikeouts coming. And we saw that yesterday, only six of them in five innings, but the 23% swinging strike is just a really incredible number. I wouldn't get carried away in terms of using your fab or using a number one or even a top five or so waiver priority for him. But I think he's a solid enough depth piece where you can roster him in some deeper 12s and some 15-team leagues. If you look at what he did last year, it was a 16.3% strikeout minus walk, 412 on the XFIP, 410 Sierra. I think you'll get something similar going forward. And while it's not going to blow you away, we're really down in terms of the player pool, especially for pitchers. I mean, there's like 20 top 50 pitchers probably who are gone at this point. So a guy like Joe Ross in a normal year where there may be not as many injuries, maybe he's not as appealing, but you know, roughly a four ERA with a 16% strikeout minus walk rate, that'll absolutely play in 15 teamers. And I think even in deeper 12 leaguers as well, or 12 teamers, I should say, he is definitely somebody that you can take a look at, but I wouldn't get overly carried away. If people start throwing hundreds of dollars of fab, that's where I would tap out. But I do think that he is worth considering at this point. Let's talk about Carlos Rodon. I don't know what the hell to make of Carlos Rodon. He's been consistently having strong starts recently, but I just don't know if I fully trust him. I mean, yesterday was great. It was another great start. Six innings, six strikeouts, didn't walk a batter, only one earned run. 27% CSW and a 13.7% swinging strike rate. Now, he doesn't quite have all the velocity he once did. He's not hitting 97, 98 consistently. I think he had one pitch yesterday, maybe two, that hit 97. He's generally in like that 94-ish kind of range. He has been able to be successful with that, though, somehow. It's almost, and I compared it yesterday in my writing to Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber went from having that ridiculous, massive strikeout rate when he won the Cy Young, and even the subsequent year, you're looking at, I think it was 41% in his Cy Young season, and then 33% the year following. Carlos Rodon was like 33%, and now it's dropped by like 10%. The reason I comp them is because Rodon is having success despite that. In spite of that, I should say. He is still going out there and producing for you, even with not really getting that many whiffs, not that many strikeouts this season. I mean, they're getting there, they're getting better, but Carlos Rodon a couple years ago was like a 200, I think it's 240 strikeouts. He has exactly one strikeout per inning this season. So even without that same level of dominance, he's still got a 331 ERA and a 122 whip. He's been really solid, especially recently. He had the one bad start against Baltimore, but generally speaking, it's been a very solid year for Carlos Rodon. I don't have the same kind of worries that I did have about Rodon maybe a couple weeks ago when he looked incredibly lost. Like the swinging miss, they're not great, the numbers, the swinging miss numbers, but they're better than they were, and it's kind of maybe an indication that he's building himself back up. I know last year he dealt with so many injuries, it was impossible to even roster him, to start him. It was a real, real challenge. But I think that Rodon is slowly figuring out how to pitch with his new self, because he's not that same guy for whatever reason. Maybe it's the injuries, maybe it's just the fact that, I don't know, I think that's probably the main thing that you can blame it on, is the fact that he has just been through the ringer in terms of injuries these last couple of years, and maybe his body is just not up to the same standards it was a couple seasons ago. But that being said, he's still really solid. A few weeks ago, I put him on the sell list. After a couple of good starts, it's like, all right, sell Rodon. I don't know that this is going to turn out particularly well for him in the long run, but it looks all right. The team context is really good. I don't have a strong feeling about him one way or the other at this point. I wouldn't be actively trying to sell him. I wouldn't be actively trying to buy him either, because, again, as much as I do trust him at this point, I don't know that that's a situation where you can have 100% certainty that Rodon is just going to be fine, there's going to be no more injury issues, whatever. Like, that velocity is still a concern. Even though he has had some success here in the early going, if he got blown up in each of his next three starts, I would say, yep, you know what, he doesn't have that velocity anymore. So there's two sides to that coin. Right now, he's getting by, and I'm not overly worried, but at the same time, I wouldn't be, like, this isn't me telling you to go buy Carlos Rodon. This is just a kind of neutral, a return to neutrality with him, because I was kind of in a panic mode, but I think now we're a little more calm in terms of what we think is going to happen with him. Let's talk about Eric Fetty. The dude's been fantastic, 2.60 ERA, 1.06 whip. In seven innings yesterday, he did not allow an earned run, six strikeouts, did not walk a batter. Now, the swing and strike rate was only 6%, 24% CSW is not great, But at the same time, he's been excellent this season as a whole. I mean, looking at one start where he doesn't have a lot of strikeouts and, you know, the swinging strike rate is not amazing, I wouldn't read too much into it. And honestly, six strikeouts is still very good. We've seen nine, we've seen 11, we've seen seven from him. We've also seen two and three. So six is probably fine. That's probably what you should expect on most nights, maybe five, six strikeouts. I just don't understand why he is only 40% rostered in Yahoo. I have rostered him in 10-team leagues very, very happily. What he's done feels fairly sustainable. I don't think that the rug is going to be pulled out from under you with Eric Fetty. Is he going to have a 2.6 ERA and a 1.06 whip? Likely not. But I still think that he's pretty sustainable. 3.71 Sierra, 16% strikeout minus walk rate. I think he's a solid SP4, SP5 that really just has no business being on any waiver wires. I think it's pretty crazy. Has he gone up at all today since I wrote these notes? Not at all. He's still 40% rostered. I think it's a mistake leaving him out there, especially like I mentioned, everybody needs pitching. Even in a 10-team league, you probably need a pitcher. If he's sitting out there, which he probably is, I would go and take a look at Eric Fetty. He should not be available really anywhere. Let's talk about Luke Raley. He's starting to heat up. We should keep that in mind. Last season, 19 homers, 14 stolen bases. He batted .250. I drafted him in a couple leagues, and I cut bait too soon because he wasn't playing. And when he was playing, it was like, you know, a couple times a week, bottom of the order. I drafted him twice, and I cut bait on him. And I think it's justified. Like, you know, it was a 12-team league, a couple 12-teamers where I cut him, and maybe one 15-teamer. Maybe I could have held on in the 15-teamer, but there was really no reason to. It didn't look like they were going to play him. And when they were, it was not really turning into much. Like, even when he was playing at the bottom of the order in a platoon role, he wasn't really giving you much in terms of fantasy value. So he was an easy cut. But he has started six of his last seven, hits in five of those games, including a couple homers in the stolen base. He may not cut it in the really shallow formats, but I think in all leagues that are 12 teams and deeper at this point, I think Luke Raley's probably worth taking a shot on. It's worth noting that he was, like I said, bottom of the order type of guy, but now he's moved up into the 5-6 slot as of late. So I have a lot more interest in Luke Raley than I did a couple weeks ago. I've kind of been a yo-yo with him because I was pretty interested in the offseason, and I'm kicking myself for not just holding on. But it's very tricky in the early going, especially a guy like that who's not, you know, I'm the preacher of patience in the early going. If you've heard any of my work, I'm not somebody who's going to be dropping established players in the early going, but Raley's not really established. I think it did make sense to cut him, I say, as I try to justify it to myself here, having let go of him. But at the same time, he's still available in a lot of leagues. If you want to try and get him back, if you did cut him, the odds are you are able to. So take a look and see if Luke Raley is sitting out there. I think he is worth consideration in 12-teamers and deeper. Let's talk now about the Brewers' bullpen situation. It seems like Trevor McGill is the closer now, and I know it's been a revolving door in Milwaukee, but he has gotten the last four save opportunities and converted all of them. I think that, for now, it is his job. And yes, Piamps has gotten some opportunities this year, and it has been kind of an annoying situation, but right now I think McGill is the guy, and I think that it will likely stay mostly that way until Devin Williams is back. Will Piamps and the odd other person get a save here and there? Yeah, I think that that's pretty fair to say. But I think that if you need a closer, and a lot of people do need closers for one reason or another, a lot of people drafted Adbert Alzolay this season. A lot of people drafted Alex Lang, Jose Leclerc, etc., and they're still scrambling. And then you see a guy like Trevor McGill, who's 44% rostered on Yahoo, and I wonder why he hasn't shot up more. Now, the uncertainty around who's going to get individual save opportunities is probably suppressing that a little bit, but even over this last week, where he has been getting the saves, he's gotten the four saves over the last week, he's still not being added up in a lot of cases. He's only gone up 6% from 38 to 44 over the past week. So I think he is the guy. I think he is the guy to be taken a look at. Is it going to be sometimes an annoying situation where you're expecting him to get the save and maybe he pitches in the eighth inning or they go to Piamps or whatever the case is? Yeah, that's going to happen. But I think if you just look overall at all the pitchers in that pen, he is probably the best suited to take that job until Williams comes back. It looks like they are realizing that at this point. And I think that you should pick him up if you need saves in any format at this point. 44% is selling him very, very short. Let's talk about another Trevor, and that's Trevor Williams, who had another really good start yesterday. It was against the White Sox, but you can only face who's in front of you. And he pitched five innings, allowed one earned run, two strikeouts, and one walk. Now, has he been overperforming? Yes, but I don't think that he's overperforming to the point where you're like, oh, it's going to really, really fall off for Trevor Williams. He's going to be terrible down the stretch. Like, he's not going to have a 194 ERA. I think we can all say that. But he has a 284 FIP. He has a 332 xERA and a 392 xFIP. Those are all really solid numbers. His Sierra, a little bit higher at 4.14. But even in that range, even if you want to take all those numbers and kind of average them out, which is not something you should do necessarily, but if you want to just look at all the ERA estimators, they're generally telling you that he should be somewhere in the mid to high threes. I think a lot of people would very happily sign up for a starting pitcher who's available in more than half of leagues right now that could give you like a mid-threes type of ERA. The team context is not going to be amazing. That being said, he's won half of his starts this year. The strikeouts are not going to be amazing, but you shouldn't expect them to be. They've never really been fantastic for him, and we saw that yesterday, just two strikeouts against Chicago is not something really to write home about. That being said, he struck out 8 Orioles in his last start, so he is capable of giving you those nice strikeout games. I think Trevor Williams is pretty undervalued, 48% rostered on Yahoo right now. Feels a little bit low. He'll face the Twins in his next matchup. I think in a 12-teamer, you'd be pretty comfortable starting him there. 12 teams and deeper, I think Trevor Williams should be somebody that you do add and you put onto your roster. I just think that, like, considering the pitching landscape, we are being maybe a little bit too picky in our brains, thinking like, okay, Joe Ross, Trevor Williams, whatever. These guys aren't great. Even Reese Olson, who's been fantastic. I think in our brains, we maybe haven't fully adjusted to the landscape of there's no healthy pitchers. These guys are pitching well. They're healthy. They're available. They should be rostered. I know it's very simple to boil it down that way, but that is the case. We're losing pitchers. We're losing a few a week. I mean, it's kind of slowed down recently, but there's still not an abundance of pitchers available, especially not ones who are doing good things for you. So I would definitely take a look at adding Trevor Williams. I would look at Reese Olson. I would look at Joe Ross. Those guys in all, not in all formats, but specific formats really do have value, specifically 12-teamers and deeper, all guys that you should be taking a look at. Let's talk a little bit about Nick Pivetta. I genuinely love Nick Pivetta. I bought in pretty heavily this year after what he did in the second half. I was initially very scared once he goes on the IL and you're hearing elbow and you're thinking Tommy John, but they elected to nurse him through it without going through surgery. That first start back against the Braves was awful, but I think that was kind of expected. In most cases, he was on your bench there in the 15-teamers where I have him. He was firmly placed on the bench, and I wouldn't change that. I mean, even if he did well, I think that the process is correct to bench Pivetta, but he got blown up in that first start against the Braves. And then immediately I saw some people were dropping him on Yahoo. I don't understand it. It's the Braves. They're going to blow up the best of pitchers. His second start back, this one against Tampa yesterday, 5 2/3, 4 hits, 2 earned runs with 8 strikeouts, no walks, a 40% CSW, and a nearly 15% swinging strike rate. Man, like, he is so good, and I really just hope he will be okay. I am fairly optimistic just based on the short time that he was shut down for. This wasn't a situation where it was like months and months and months, and they're doing what they can with, like, I don't think he had different shots or injections or anything. Like, I think that they just let him rest, and I could have missed something there. There's a lot of pitcher stuff to keep up with and pitchers having different procedures and whatever, cortisone shots, whatever it is. I don't think that Pivetta had any of that. I think it was just rest and build back up. I think that he'll be okay, but at the same time, I don't think you'd be crazy for just seeing what the market is like for Pivetta in your league, because as much as I have faith and optimism, and part of that is because I roster him in like half of my leagues, there is a chance that this doesn't end well. I've talked about it with Tristan McKenzie. It's only fair that I talk about it with Nick Pivetta. You guys are pitching through, and it's a different thing. I think McKenzie has a partial tear, and with Pivetta, it's a strain or something. It's different language they use, but it's, bottom line is injured elbow for pitcher, and that usually doesn't lead anywhere besides, the operating room. But I think Pivetta is probably okay. I just think that it would make sense to explore the market. If there's a guy in your league who likes Nick Pivetta as much as I do, there's a chance you might be able to get back a nice return for somebody without the elbow issues. And again, like, elbow issues could pop up for anybody at any point. We're kind of just playing whack-a-mole. But there is some risk. There is absolutely some elevated risk with Nick Pivetta. And I think that, it wouldn't hurt to just see what the rest of your league is offering. Let's talk about Ronald Blanco. I realize I misspelled him in my write-up as Ronald Blano, but he is somebody that has really puzzled me this season. He comes up as a career minor leaguer without really much of a track record of success at all. He's been very lucky in terms of batted ball luck, in terms of how many walks he's allowing and still getting by. Even yesterday in the first inning, he loaded the bases and then he gets out of it. He was ejected for having a foreign substance on his glove. And the umpire who did the check, I believe it was the first base umpire, said that since they started doing these checks, whenever it was, 3 years ago, three, 4 years ago, this is the stickiest glove he had ever inspected. Now, the other side of that is, I'm sure a lot of you guys follow TJ Stats on Twitter and a few different people that put out stuff models and, you know, model pitches. There's nothing to suggest that Blanco was, you know, cheating yesterday, for lack of a better word. There wasn't massive increased spin rates on his pitches. The stuff looked about the same as it always does. No real reason to think that there was anything necessarily nefarious from that perspective. But I do worry about Blanco as a whole because of the things I mentioned earlier. And now we've got something that's maybe a mental thing. And it's hard to factor in mental stuff, non-statistical things into your equation. But this might be something that rattles him. Getting kicked out of a game in the third inning, maybe he's cheating, maybe he wasn't. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say he wasn't. And this was a hot night where there's a buildup of sweat and rosin and whatever else. And let's say it was fully above board. This could kind of mess with a guy who had been going on really solid vibes recently, which, again, I know it sounds stupid. But if you just look at the numbers for Blanco, he has been very, very fortunate to have the luck that he has had. Blanco is stranding a hell of a lot of base runners. He is not really letting anybody who gets on base come home. 91% left on base rate, 203 on the BABIP. He is walking four batters per nine, which is over 11%. He should not be having the success that he is having necessarily. The ERA is two runs lower than the XFIP and the Sierra. He's been very fortunate. And maybe this is something where, and again, I don't want to lean into the cheating aspect. I want to lean more into the mental aspect of getting kicked out of a game if you're not actually cheating, but you're accused of it, whatever. He's not somebody who, and I don't know him from anybody, but that can have an effect on you. It really can, especially somebody who had been really grooving. I've been accused of being a Ronel Blanco hater. You hate him personally. You don't like him, whatever. No, it's not about that. It's about fantasy baseball. And I think, in terms of fantasy baseball, I've seen a lot of people, very smart people, ranking him as a top 30, top 40 pitcher. I don't see him as a top 70 pitcher. I think that this is something that's going to really fall off down the stretch. Think of Bryce Elder from last season, somebody who was pitching for a good team, albeit Houston's not really a good team right now, but Bryce Elder was absolutely cruising in the first half last year. If you were looking at people's Cy Young predictions at the All-Star break, he was probably on their ballot. And he was outrunning his advanced metrics for most of that time, and it caught up with him. In a big way, it caught up with him, and the second half was garbage. I expect something similar to happen with Ronel Blanco. This is something where he's not got that long track record to fall back on. There's not a massive strikeout rate. He is well overperforming his advanced numbers. I think that this is the sign that you should absolutely sell him. Do whatever you can and get back whatever you can, because I do think it is going to get pretty ugly. Now, when I say whatever you can, it's not to trade him for, you know, a bench piece or something, or a, you know, some middle reliever, but I would be trying to get back like a top 30 or so starting pitcher, because that's the way a lot of people are valuing him. And I think that you could probably demand that price tag in most cases. I would do it before the wheels fall out, because I do think that will happen sooner than later. Let's talk a little bit about AJ Puk and the Marlins. So he returned from the IL on Monday. He picked up the save yesterday in their win versus Detroit. Now, it's worth noting this game went to extra innings. Tanner Scott pitched the ninth, and then they brought in Puk in the 10th, and he got the save. Scott's been pretty solid after a bit of a bumpy start to the season, and I think it'd be premature to assume that Scott's just lost the job now and Puk is the closer. Like, I heard some people saying that. No, that's not what happened here. The game went to extra innings. If it had been a standard nine-inning game and Miami goes into the ninth with the lead, I'd imagine Tanner Scott does get that opportunity. But there's a few different angles here. Scott is kind of inconsistent. Last year was really good for him, but it was also kind of just like an outlier, amazing season. I don't know that I trust him consistently. I don't know that I trust AJ Puk consistently either. But Scott has had some blow-ups, and they've removed him from the role before, and you know, there is some inconsistency there. The big part of it, though, is that Buster Olney reported last week, Buster Olney from ESPN, said that when Miami starts to, you know, really get the fire sale going, and with Arias already been traded, you figure it's coming sooner than later, there's a good chance that Tanner Scott is the next domino to fall. And if he does fall, they're not bringing back a closer or a high-leverage reliever. They're bringing back a package of future assets, of prospects. And in that case, AJ Puk almost certainly slides into the closer role. So I think it's a prudent move to add AJ Puk. I added him in one league yesterday, and it's a 10-teamer. And it's like I mentioned earlier, some people are just desperate for saves. I drafted Alex Lang, and I drafted Albert Elsley in that league because I kind of punted the position. and it came back to bite me in the ass. So now I've picked up AJ Puck. I don't know that anything's going to happen imminently, but if you have the room to stash, if you have that luxury of a free roster spot, maybe you just put somebody on the IL, you have an easy cut, I think you could do worse than taking a shot on AJ Puck. I really do. I don't know that it'll happen immediately, but I'd be pretty surprised if at some point this season he doesn't assume that role. And I do think a lot of it is Miami is going to just start trading pieces, and Tanner Scott does seem pretty likely to get out of town. There's also a chance that Puck just gets there on merit. So I do think that at this point he really is worthy of a consideration for a pickup. Let's talk about Reed Detmers. Man, it's I don't know what happened. I made the joke that he went from looking like Randy Johnson to Randy Dobnak, and I mean, it's pretty bad. It's been pretty bad. That being said, below the surface, it does look better than what the results have been. But yesterday, we got another 4 earned runs, 8 hits, 2 walks. It was not a great outing for him again. That being said, 38% CSW, 17.9% swinging strike rate are really great numbers. He allowed a 500 BABIP and only stranded 50% of the base runners, so a little bit unlucky. It's been a bad stretch. It's been a really awful stretch. But I wouldn't really want to give up on Reed Detmers either at this point. I think that there's a lot there still. And I get it. A lot of people have cut him already because it's been really, really bad few weeks. The ERA is up to 5.19. But he has a 3.66 xFIP. In fact, all of those indicators are below 4. 3.58 Sierra, 3.47 xERA. The strikeouts are still at an excellent 26.3%, and he's actually shaved almost a full point off of his walk rate from last year. I think that he's going to be fine, as much as it is worrisome. He's not stranding as many base runners as usual. The BABIP is a little bit higher. These are small things that will adjust over time. It's not like a drastic fix-all that the left on base goes up a few points and you're now fixed. But I think there's a combination of a few things that will start to turn around for him as the year goes on, and I think that cutting him would be premature. Again, with the state of pitchers, the fact that he gives you this many strikeouts on a per-start basis, I think it would be a little bit premature to cut bait on him. I would do what I can to hold him. If you're in a 10-teamer or a very, very shallow type of league, I would understand it, but I wouldn't really want to be getting rid of him either. It's tricky. It is tricky because in those shallow, shallow formats, maybe there's no need. Maybe your league only rosters like 7 starting pitchers and there's just, or your team, like each team in the league only has like 7 starting pitchers or whatever. Maybe he's not cutting it. I think in most cases, he really, really should be rostered. I wouldn't want to be cutting bait yet. A lot of people have. If we take a look over on Yahoo and we take a look at the drops and everything, he's down 7% again today. He's been dropped by nearly 2,000 teams. Only 40%. Like, it's, I understand it, but I think it is a little bit premature at the same time. Let's talk about Connor Joe. And I got to apologize to my friend Frank Stample for this one because it looks like he was right. Not that we had a bet or anything, but he's always a big Connor Joe guy. If you listen to the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast, Frank is a huge, huge Connor Joe guy. And it's actually panning out this year so far. I mean, he's batting .293 with a .370 on base and a .520 slug, 24 runs scored, 21 ribbies, 6 homers, a couple steals. He's been a top 100 player. He's been fantastic. You know, in the middle of April, I tweeted out kind of tongue-in-cheek that he comes around every year in April. He has a great month. He steals all your FAB money, and then he goes away without really much. But he's actually kept it up longer than he really ever has. He's only on 40% of Yahoo rosters. You got that dual eligibility at first and in the outfield. I think that there is a lot of value in Connor Joe. He's currently, at this point, a top 75 player. Now, he's gone up to 45% rostered, but you should still be able to find him in most cases. I mean, batting third, batting fourth, playing pretty much every day. I don't think that he should be available in nearly as many leagues as he is. Let's also talk about Abraham Toro here quickly. He's been playing like a stud, and he had another multi-hit game yesterday. He's been a top 10 player over the last 2 weeks, and he's been the everyday leadoff hitter out in Oakland. I would imagine it's not terribly sustainable, but I would encourage adding him and just kind of riding out this heater. You never know when those are going to start and when they're going to end, but Oakland's been really good, and I think considering the fact that he is at the top of the order, he's worth consideration right now. Second base and third base eligibility is also very, very sweet. You get that middle slash corner if your league has that kind of specifications. Only on 52% of rosters. It's pretty, pretty low still. Like, I know we're talking Abraham Toro here, but he's batting .295. He's leading off. The team is doing well. I would take a shot on him. In a lot of cases, pretty much in every league at this point, I would take a shot on Abraham Toro. He should be somebody That is on a lot more than just 50% of rosters. But we are going to leave it there. I don't know if you guys heard the show yesterday, but I'm just still in the late stages of getting over having COVID over the last week, which is why this show was actually delayed a day or two more than it probably should have been. But we are going to be back here tomorrow, and this show will be in your feed every single weekday. Occasionally, I will do the Friday show on Saturday and switch it up just because sometimes I want to talk about the Friday slate. But you're getting 5 podcasts a week. I really hope you guys will consider subscribing, leaving those positive reviews, and doing all of that great stuff. If you want to see more work from me, I have recently joined the team over at Fantasy Pros. What I'm doing right now is more behind the scenes, editing podcasts and articles and that kind of thing. But you will see content from me as well. I'll be doing podcasts and different things over the next few months. We'll see when that eventually happens. But I will be doing content over there as well. And if you want to check out my own work and support me personally and the show directly, please do take a look at my Patreon. The link is in my bio. We're talking fantasy baseball there. All day, I'm putting out notes. In the evening, we're talking about starting pitchers. We are talking literally everything. The link is in the bio, so please do check that out. But guys, we'll be back again tomorrow. But until then, take care. Have a great night.